This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. My name is Kate and I'm an alcoholic. The purpose of this show is to increase public awareness of Alcoholics Anonymous as an effective means of recovery from the disease of alcoholism. Our show has two parts. First, we'll talk a bit about alcoholism, what it is and what AA can do to help. Then, we'll interview a recovering alcoholic who is an active member of AA. I'm now going to ask our guest to read the AA preamble, which is read at the start of every AA meeting.
Yeah, hi, my name's Daniel and I'm an alcoholic. AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied to any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thanks, Daniel. So what is alcoholism? Alcoholism is a disease, not a disgrace. There's no shame in having an illness or a disease. An unusual feature of this disease is that it will do whatever it can to convince you that you do not have it. However, once it has a hold of you, the progression of symptoms is like the classic disease model, and the victim is as helpless as a sufferer of cancer. If you are an alcoholic, you're at the beginning of a long road that usually ends in one of three places: prisons, institutions, or death. If you think this sounds dramatic, we can assure you that our collective experience has shown this to be true. The challenge is to convince the alcoholic to admit that they need help and become willing to seek it. Denial is a major symptom of alcoholism. The alcoholic is often the last one to recognise it and admit that they have it. Our definition of alcoholism is that it is an allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind. The allergy is the physical aspect of the disease. After having the first drink, the phenomenon of craving develops and we lose control over when we will stop drinking. The old saying is one is too many and a thousand is never enough. And yet because of the obsession of the mind, the mental aspect of the disease, the alcoholic is compelled to keep picking up the first drink. This makes us powerless. We often hear from sober alcoholics that many doubted whether life could be fun without alcohol. Fortunately, those same people report that their lives have improved dramatically since they became sober. The 12-step program of recovery, which is discussed at meetings and which is outlined in the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book, is how we get sober and maintain our sobriety one day at a time. This program has a proven track record of helping otherwise hopeless alcoholics to achieve long-term sobriety and recovery. It has taught us how to enjoy life sober. Okay, for anyone who has just joined us, you're listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. We're just about to interview an AA member who is going to share their experience with alcoholism. So, let's meet our guest. Would you just like to introduce yourself and just give us a quick idea of who you are?
Yeah, my name's Daniel. I'm a recovering alcoholic in my early 40s and 2 years sober.
Fantastic. So, can you tell us a little bit about, are you from Christchurch, or what do you do?
Well, I'm actually from the UK. I immigrated over here in 2001, and I'm a plumber gas fitter by trade. Yeah, I live on a wee farmlet out in Amberley.
Oh, lovely. So, can you tell us a little bit about growing up in the UK? What was that like for you?
Oh, you know, it was growing up. It was born... you know, in a place just outside of London, and I was the youngest of four children, and grew up on a council estate. Yeah, it was good fun. It was good fun. The alcoholism, you know, was kind of present in the family a wee bit, and bit of, you know, violence and stuff like that growing up. And of course, I wanted to fit in with my brothers and sisters, which were all a lot older than me. So alcohol seemed like a great idea.
Youngest of four, eh? Can you tell us a little bit about why you, or when you started to drink, and how that went for you, that sort of start period of your drinking?
Sure. Well, drinking was always a part of family life. It was always socially acceptable to have a drink. You know, as I said, it was a part of fitting in, being a part of the family. You know, they were intimate times, they were nice times. Family parties, or, you know, on a Friday night, having a drink with the family was quite cool. You know, it was a togetherness. Yeah.
So it helped you, when I hear you say that, you sort of helped you feel that fit in, and it was, as you say, it's those times of intimacy, it's fun, no problems.
No, I mean, problems kind of came a wee bit later.
Yeah.
As I got older, alcohol, I wanted those intimate times all the time. You know, I wanted to feel okay all the time. And what I found was that, you know, I was quite insecure as a person, and alcohol gave me that confidence to feel a part of what was going on, to socialise, to be around other people. Yeah.
So started off with family drinking, then obviously, as you say, you got older, sort of started with friends and things like that. Did you notice any problems back then with your drinking?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I could never get enough, that was for sure. At the beginning, it was, you know, the hangovers. The hangovers used to really do me in. And, of course, you know, being so young, you know, I was drinking alcoholically from probably about 16. I couldn't afford the good stuff, you know, so I was drinking the cheapest stuff you could get your hands on. Yeah, that was pretty unpleasant stuff. Yeah, kind of 2 or 3 litres of cider or something like that, you know, that was 11-12%. Bottle of that a night was okay, you know. I just, struggled the next day until I could get the next lot.
And did you notice your drinking was any different to your friends' drinking or anything?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my friends could quite happily drink kind of half a bottle of the stuff, or decide that they'd had enough, and I could never get my head around that, really. It was a kind of a waste. I found myself finishing off their drinks, you know, and normally the night would either end up with me comatosed or in an argument or some kind of unpleasant situation. It was never, you know, fluffy bunnies and off to sleep nice and comfortable.
And was anyone saying anything to you about your drinking? Was that sort of, were those comments starting, or was it just you noticing that I'm a bit more hungover than everyone, I'm drinking a bit more than everyone?
Well, I mean, it was kind of like a peer pressure-y type club, I suppose, I was in. You know, we all kind of egged each other on at that stage. I mean, the signs came later on, really. Yeah, the signs came later on when I started mixing it with other chemicals and things like that, you know.
Do you want to tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, I started dabbling in marijuana, and, you know, as time went on, speed came along. Then started taking E, and then went on to cocaine,
It's interesting hearing you say that. It's, you know, what I hear is the alcohol just isn't getting you to that point anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was trying to get the kind of dose right, trying to get the right blend of chemicals to feel okay. And I found that certain drugs would enable me to do, you know, drink for longer, be more coherent, and kind of fill that void that I was really searching to fill, really.
But alcohol was always in the mix, though?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Alcohol was always there, you know. It was a star performer.
So can you tell me a bit about, what was it? Obviously, you know, everything was, you know, you were adding in more and all of that sort of stuff. And can you tell me a bit about what it was that made you hit a bottom, that made you, well, made you get to a point where you suddenly went, I need to do something about this? Like, what was that for you?
Well, as time went on, you know, life became all about just getting drunk and high. That's what it was about. And I managed to mix in a bit of normal life with that too. You know, I became, you know, I could function a wee bit. Not to my full, but I did the best I could. And, you know, after I completed my apprenticeship, I met a girl. And we went off to New York for a weekend. And, you know, it was interesting actually looking back on that time, because it was a flatting situation and all of her flatmates were going to go. But once they found out I was going to go, three of them dropped out. You know, and that shows kind of what I was like. Wasn't a pleasant drinker, wasn't a pleasant drunk. There was something unkind of comfortable about me. But we went off to New York anyway, and I proceeded to do what I do, which is find the nearest bar and get hammered. And then the next morning, you know, my girlfriend said to me, look, I can't do this anymore. I can't have, you know, I can't deal with this. And for the first time, you know, I kind of actually sat there and thought, I don't think I can either. I've had enough. And I started looking at my drinking and drugging. I mean, I was never comfortable doing it. It was never like great. It was just something I did, you know, something I needed. But I suppose looking back even before that point, there were lots of times where alcohol and drugs had cost me a lot. Drink driving ban, even before I got my license, you know. And, you know, going into courts, being locked up overnight, you know, until I sobered up. Family troubles. I actually lost my job as an apprentice through drinking and drugging. It was affecting a lot of parts of my life, but at the time, you know, it was everybody else's fault. You know, it was everybody else's fault. You know, that employer, I mean, you know, all I wanted to do was go for a drive. Crikey. You know, if I want to smash the car up, that's my lookout. You know, it's my car. I should have run away. That's what I shouldn't have done. I shouldn't have stayed there and faced the consequences. I should have legged it. And things like that, you know, it was always kind of trying to negotiate these kind of consequences. But one thing's for sure, it was never drugs or alcohol or me. It was everybody else's responsibility, really.
You know, some of the stuff I hear you saying is not just the external problems that you were having. What I really heard you saying there is I needed alcohol. It wasn't even like a, I want it, you know, go have a drink with friends on a Friday night sort of style thing. You needed those things in your life, even though all of that external stuff was going on.
Absolutely.
So internally, I imagine there was, what if you can remember, what was going on for you?
Oh, look, it was carnage.
Yeah.
I mean, what was happening inside of me was look, it was really, I mean, when I was, you know, I even noticed that when I got loaded, I would also start freaking out. You know, I'd start getting really angry about things that had happened in the past and rehashing situations and all but flashing back into situations that had happened in the past. And also there was just turmoil, pain and anguish inside of me. I can remember a suicide attempt, you know, where 3 a.m. there was nobody around. It was just me drunk. And I just wanted out of that pain. And obviously it didn't work. But at the time, you know, it was just sadness, depression. It was an awful place to be. And I just wanted out, but I didn't know how. I just didn't know how to get out of this kind of trapped existence that I'd found myself in. Yeah, as I say, it was, for me, drinking and drugging was a serious occupation. You know, it was really my only way of feeling okay. It didn't strike me for one minute that just maybe that was the problem. Just maybe that was what was causing a lot of my problems. For me, at that stage, it was the way out of my problems, even though they seemed to keep compounding and getting worse. And yeah, interesting looking back on it, you know, with a bit of hindsight, rather than being trapped in it.
That short-term fix at the time just gets you out of it in that instant, doesn't it? But it's now being able to look back. So how then did you go from that, you know, from all of that emotional and physical and all of those problems, well, how did you even find out about a way out of that?
Well, funny, that relationship kept going, you know, with that girlfriend. And we ended up getting a place together in London. And yeah, my girlfriend came back to New Zealand. She's a New Zealander, I'm an Englishman. And you know, she basically said, I'm going back to New Zealand and that's the end of it. And you know, I was drinking that cider again, and I was in the flat on my own, and I just reached a point where I felt powerless. There must be something outside of me that can fix this, because you see, I'd really tried. Like I'd really, really tried not to drink. I'd managed to curb the drugs a wee bit, but the drinking was always present. You know, I found that, you know, when I gave up drinking, I was able to do a couple of weeks or a week, and then I would, the obsession, the drive would overtake me, and I'd pick up again. You know, and then I found, hey, well, why not stop drinking and just smoke marijuana? And then kind of the same thing would happen. So it was, it got to a stage where I just couldn't use any chemical successfully, really. So I picked up the phone and I rung AA. And that was a really cool time. Suddenly there was a bit of hope in my life that, that maybe there's a solution.
So you were still in the UK?
Yep.
Rung AA? Yep.
Yep.
And so did someone come and see you? Did you go to a meeting? Like, what happened?
Well, I'll just back the track up a little bit. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said to me, you know, look, have you ever tried AA? You know, and I said, no. And then there was a place called Turning Point, which was a rehab. And I made an appointment to see them, and that, look, we're in London, and there's seriously low bottom cases of people that are near death's door, and they didn't have enough beds for everyone. So as a result, they said to me, you know, look, try AA. And that was my driving point towards contacting. That was who let me know, you know, if you like, healthcare professionals. And yeah, I rang AA and spoke to a person, and they said that there was a meeting in a hospital the next night. So I went along.
That's brave. Good on you, you know, on your own to step into a meeting like that. How did you find the meeting and the people within there?
Great.
Yeah.
Suddenly there was these people that seemed to understand what life was like for me. And I'd never, ever kind of met people that understood what it was like. I had these people around me that used to say, look, you need to drink your pints in half-pint glasses, and you need to stop drinking, and you need to stop drugging, and can't you see that this is the problem and that's the problem, and you need to da-da-da-da-da. But never anybody that kind of stuck their arm around me and said, look, I know what that's like. What I did is, it was always what you need to do is.
Yeah, that's really powerful, that somebody that actually has experienced it and understands it, rather than, well, let's just say no.
That's right.
So what have you done since then, basically, to, I mean, obviously this is, we're talking about, you're still in the UK, and you mentioned you didn't come to New Zealand until 2001. You've now got 2 years of sobriety. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Well, I would go to AA meetings, but, you know, I was in my early 20s, and at that stage, the hangovers and the consequences were really what I wanted to alleviate. You know, I didn't really embrace the program. I just wanted to not drink and not have the consequences. So as a result, you know, over that time, you know, I would slip and slide. You know, I'd get 3 months up and then I'd relapse. And I knew where I needed to go. That was one thing for sure. You know, there was only one place that could kind of help me, and that was Alcoholics Anonymous. And I kept returning back to AA because nowhere else had the answer. I got 9 months sobriety up in the UK, and I had a service position over there, you know, because in AA, you know, we have these service positions where you help out at meetings. I was a literature secretary, and the time came, it seemed like a good idea to emigrate over to the UK, over to New Zealand, and I came over here, and I found AA very different. I didn't have my support people, and you know, everything was, it was too much for me at that stage. You know, I did something that was, you know, rather extravagant at the best of times, let alone being only 9 months sober. And it wasn't long before, you know, the thought crossed my mind, you know, would Canterbury Draft be okay? You know, maybe the alcohol over here is different. Maybe now I'm here, my alcoholism will be different, and I can have one or two and life will be good. You know, and I can remember my relapse over here. I remember asking the bar lady, how many of these can I have before I'm over the limit? As if that ever stopped me. Yes, I got drunk there. I only planned on having one or two, you know, just to take the edge off, but no, had to keep going.
But you're sober now, and that's what's fantastic. So what do you do today, basically, to ensure your sobriety, to keep sober?
Well, I attend two meetings a week, and they're recovery-based meetings. One is a big book study, which is the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous. Mm-hmm. And the other one is a steps meeting, which is the 12 by 12, which mm-hmm. is discussing the steps in more detail. Mm-hmm. I do those two meetings per week, and I have a routine in the morning. I wake up, I read two bits of literature, I pray. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what to, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. And I just go through the day doing the best I can.
And so all of those feelings you talked about earlier, you know, all of those painful emotional feelings, what is it like today in sobriety?
Well, if we use the pain scale that, you know, sometimes they use in hospitals and stuff, you know, the pain scale back then was 10. Mm. 10, 10, 10, 10, 10. Now the pain scale's 1 to 2. Mm. It's dropped dramatically. Mm. And I feel a lot more freer. Mm. I'm able to deal with situations that just would be impossible to deal with back then. Mm. And life's good today. Life is good. I enjoy my life. I enjoy what I have in it. Mm. I enjoy having those connections to people that I never had before. Mm. Yeah. Box of fluffy ducks on this side.
Oh, that's awesome. I'd love to ask you more, but unfortunately for time, we're going to have to wrap it up. But thank you, Daniel, for coming
in. You're welcome.
Thank you. For all of our listeners out there, if you've related to anything that you've heard or would like some more information about Alcoholics Anonymous, you can look us up on the web at www.aa.org.nz or call us on 0800 AA Works. There are over 60 meetings a week in Canterbury, so it's likely that there's one near you. Join us next week to hear from more AA members sharing their experiences. Our show airs every Monday at 5:30 on Plains FM and repeats on Wednesdays at 12:30 p.m. You can also find podcasts of our past shows on the Plains FM website at plainsfm.org.nz, or you can download, subscribe and listen to podcasts on iTunes and Spotify. That brings us to the end of the show. Thank you for listening, and remember, if you want to drink, that's your business, but if you want to stop, we can help. You don't have to do it alone. We will now close the show with a serenity prayer, as we do in every AA meeting.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
You've been listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show on Plains FM 96.9.